Davis Van Opdorp here with Matt Ford, Jonathan Harding, and Felix Tomczyk. A full house today for this weekend's action. Another coach in the Bundesliga got fired. We'll get into all the news surrounding Hannover. And we're going to talk about who is the most exciting team to watch in the Bundesliga right now, thanks to your suggestions. But first, let's start in Dortmund. So Matt Ford was in Dortmund to catch their 5-1 victory over Hannover. It did cost Andre Breitenreiter's job. We'll get to that later. But first, here's what Matt Ford came back with.
I'm at the Westfalenstadion, directly behind the south stand, the Südtribüne. Luckily I've got a long-term season ticket holder on the Südtribüne. I've got Adam, who's agreed to speak to us and talk a bit about Borussia Dortmund and the fan culture here. But first of all, let's talk about the football. Obviously, it's been a fantastic season for Borussia Dortmund so far. The positives go on and on, whether it's Roman Bürki's performances, whether it's Julian Weigl's surprise performances at the back, whether it's Witzel and Delaney in midfield, whether Sancho up front. So many positives. What do you think is the main positive? What's been the thing that has impressed you most this season?
I think the character of the team is very good this season. I will not say suffer from good luck, but they enjoy it. This character is bringing the team further through the season. They play with a lot of Leidenschaft, how you say it in English, passion, exactly. And this is also winning the points for the team this season. I think the best example is the away game in Leverkusen this season, where Dortmund led already. We're behind 2-0, and still they managed to make the game upside down and to win 4-2. I was also in this game. It was one of the great moments with Borussia Dortmund since I'm watching football. I think the only game which I had more fun or enjoy was the semi-final against Real Madrid, where we won 4-1. It was a great atmosphere there. And I think that the character is what's making the difference between this season and the other seasons.
There is a great confidence running through not just the team but the whole club. And I remember thinking back to that game in Leverkusen. I only watched that one on television, but I thought as soon as Dortmund got the first, I was convinced then that there was only going to be one winner in that game. Was that what the atmosphere was like in the away end as well?
Let me tell you something. I was with my wife in this game, and I told my wife in the break between the first and the second half, I told her, listen, good, we're going to win this game. It was something like a special feeling in the air, and it was like everybody knew that we're going to win this game, even though we were 2-0 behind. You can also felt it on the stand, because everybody was cheering more than in other games, and it was very fun to see it. It was like the predictions coming true, and my wife said how you knew it, why you didn't bet on it and stuff like that. But
why didn't you put a bet on it? Yeah. That's always the question. We always know more in hindsight, don't we? But as a fan, you do get that feeling sometimes, don't you, that it's just going to work. Marco Reus was key in that game, and he's been key. He's been important for Dortmund all season. What does he mean to Dortmund fans? Obviously, he's a local lad. He's a talisman for Dortmund. How important is he?
I think it's like a glue. Which is bringing everything together. It's something very special for this club. Anyway, this kind of time in this football, we don't see a lot of football players which are really connected to the club which they belong to. And I think this this with Marco Reus, it's a very special thing. You can see also his leadership on the field, and it's like the component that is bringing everything together. If Marco Reus is not playing, you have the feeling that it's not going to work so good as when he's on the field, and this is one of the key
stuff.
That
was precisely what happened last week, though, the game against Red Bull. Marco Reus obviously got injured in the final training session, I think.
And yet the team gave a very good performance, but I think it's also something that Reus have to do with as long as in the team, he don't need to play. It's enough when it's on the team, and even if he's on the bench or he's on the stand, you can feel the confidence that he's giving the players, and I'm sure that's also on the on the trainings and everything, I'm sure that he's also giving some words and making the players train more than other players that are just coming here to have their success and to keep forwards and go to other clubs.
We hear, for example, that he seems apparently to have a particularly good relationship with Jadon Sancho and some of the younger players who seem to really look up to him.
Players. I mean, also Dembele. The last season, Dembele also talked a lot about the connection with Marco Reus and other players as well. Immobile, for example, even though it's maybe a bad example, but even Immobile, he said that the only player that he had good connections with is Marco Reus. And it's something that each club needs it, because a player in the cabin that it's taking the new players and giving them the feeling that they are at home. This is basically one of the things that are making the new players better when they're playing on the pitch. And this is something very important, and I think Dortmund gained a lot of profit from it, from Marco Reus. Other stuff that I can also say, I mean, there are two very good players this season that are playing in the midfield. It's Delaney and Witzel.
They've been so solid, haven't they?
I think they're making such a quiet job. The most of the players, of the journalists and player and fans that are seeing the games, they won't even talk about it. But if you will take a look on all the games of Borussia Dortmund this year, you will feel the difference between the midfield of Dortmund this season and the midfield of Dortmund in last seasons. And I think it's something that that Dortmund missed a lot since Gündoğan left.
Yeah.
And it's something that Dortmund will take profit more, I mean, also in the future. Witzel and Delaney just came this season, and if they're going to play for Dortmund for a long time, I think Dortmund will profit from it a lot, together with Marco Reus and Elkaser and maybe some more good players that will come. I think that Dortmund are on the way to be dominated on the Bundesliga and maybe to give even Bayern a real fight for the championship. I think that also Watzke and other staff in the management are also giving this feeling to the players. If we saw till now the problematic of Watzke telling Bayern it's much better and we are underdogs in the fight on the championship, this year you see that it's got a turn.
Yeah.
Watzke it's talking much more confidence about the team, and when the management and the chairman is talking so good about you, it's giving you confidence, and this is how you can also fight, let's say, the Bayern.
I think what's been really impressive, I've written about it a few times and spoken about it on this podcast before, is the clarity that's running through the hierarchy and the structure here at Borussia Dortmund. There seems to be a clear idea of what the club is. Watzke seems to have adjusted his position slightly, obviously bringing in Sebastian Kehl and Matthias Sammer into the club as well has been really helpful. So yeah, you just get the impression that there's a very that everyone's pulling in the same direction at Dortmund. I think that stands Dortmund in really good stead for the season to come. Let's talk about the fan culture in Dortmund a little bit, because you're a season ticket holder on the yellow wall here. How long have you had a season ticket in Dortmund?
Actually, I got it through a lot of luck.
Yeah.
A good friend of mine had a good friend that was pregnant, and she gave away her season ticket, and I was the first.
That was good timing for you.
Exactly. A very good timing, let's say. I have it now for 5 years. I missed like three games in this period of time. I think when you're coming here, it's like coming home.
Yeah.
Every time when you're coming with a train, you see the stadium from the far, you just feel like coming home. And this is like the special thing about it. I mean, just you can't compare it with nothing else on the world. I've been in a lot of stadiums, also in England, also in France, also in Spain, in Italian, in a lot of playgrounds around the world. And I need to say that I didn't feel at home in none of them. But here I feel really at home. You feel there are some things you can't explain with words. And this is one of them.
You also go to a lot of away games. I just heard you talking to a friend before, asking if he's booked his flights to London for the Champions League game against Tottenham. Are you going?
Yeah, we're going to London. Actually, we have also a fan club which coming from Israel. There are a lot of Israelis coming also, the Israeli Shep Olsen. And we have like around 4 to 6 Israelis which are coming every game. It's not the same people, but it's every time between 4 and 6 Israelis. We also work with Borussia Dortmund, about keep on the Israeli people coming here. One of those things are also the tickets to London. There are going to be like 6 Israelis also in London, and we're going to be there also together. This guy which I saw before is one of the best friends of us actually.
He's going to run the bus all the way to London.
Yeah, more or less. He's going with a bus, we're going with a flight. With a bus it's a bit too long for us. But he's also familiar with a lot of Israelis and a good friend from us. And actually we're watching the games also together a lot of times. And this is also one of the good things which we can tell on the fan culture. Everybody knows about their right rise in Germany, in all of Europe.
We see Dortmund have always been very sort of open, they've quite actively worked against that.
Exactly, and one of the good things that that we can actually say about the Dortmund fan culture is that there is a lot of people which are actually against it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, when they hear about the Israeli fan club, they are willing to help, willing to hear about it more, to meet us and to have stickers. And And this is something that they're giving a bit of, let's say, optimistics.
I think that is an important thing to mention about Borussia Dortmund in particular, because Dortmund is a city, it's not the richest city in Germany. It has one of the highest rates of unemployment in Western Germany, and I think as a result, one of the highest right-wing votes in Germany, and that is reflected, as it is in many cities, in the makeup of the football stadium. And Borussia Dortmund, as a club, has had its problems with right-wing and neo-Nazi supporters in the past as well, and those problems don't go away unless people work and actively work against it. Yeah, well, for you, Adam, as the Israeli yourself, do you feel comfortable that Borussia Dortmund, not just the club, but also the fans, the ultras, the active hardcore supporters, that they do a lot of enough work against that sort of thing?
I think you can never say enough, because until this thing disappears from the world, this racism and all the neo-Nazi shit, until this one will disappear from our let's say community, it's not enough. But anyway, I think the Germans need to do much more about it. But not only the Germans, I think everybody needs to do more about it. You can also see that, for example, Chelsea is starting to work with Borussia Dortmund about exactly the same projects to kick the racism out. And I think it's a blessed that a lot of football clubs are doing it, because football is bringing the people together. And when you're bringing the people together, you suddenly find out that there is not a lot of differences between the people. And this is something very special. And I think that this is something that needs to keep on until the Nazis are kicked out of the stadiums. This is something very special.
That's a particularly important message with Holocaust Memorial Day coming up on Monday. A topic which frequently comes up in German football and is something that's a topic that's ever present, and I think that's a good thing that these sort of topics remain at the forefront of people's minds. Finally, coming back to today, Hanover at home. On paper, an easy game, but very quickly, prediction?
I think there is not easy game in German Bundesliga. It's going to be a hard game. If you can say it like this, the Hannoveraner werden a bus on the 16 box parking.
Parking the bus in front of the goal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not going to be easy today, but if Dortmund is going to make the game easy, it's going to be easy. Let's say like this. They need to keep Druck, like
pressure.
All the game. And if they're going to do it, they're going to win the game easily. But
you
never know.
For the score?
I hope 3-0.
3-0. Goal scorers?
Royce, Doppelpack. Two goals and another one from Sancho.
Okay, right, let's see how it goes. Yeah. Adam, thank you very much for the information. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I hope you didn't suffer with English.
That was the sound of Mario Götze making it 3-0. to Borussia Dortmund at the Westfalenstadion today against Hanover. Dortmund's second goal in 2 minutes, that was, and it ended up then being three goals in 7 minutes, and ultimately 5-1 over the 90 minutes. An absolutely rampant Borussia Dortmund performance in the second half, although it did take them a little while to get going against a fairly stubborn Hanover defence in the first half, although ultimately that was all in vain from the visitors. Just as we were last week, we're on the way back from Dortmund now. I'm with Matt Marshall again. This is becoming a regular taxi service on Saturday evenings, I think, Matt.
I'll start charging you soon, mate.
Well, thanks again for the lift. Matt. We were talking about that third goal before, weren't we? Because obviously it came from a Jadon Sancho run through the middle of the park. He popped up on the left, on the right and down the middle today. It was an impressive performance, wasn't it?
Yeah, Jadon Sancho, you know, when you see him live, his technical ability and his decision-making and the ability to execute the pass is just sensational. He was on the right today and then he switched over to the left and back on the right, and then in the second half he went back onto the left to basically isolate Kevin Akpoguma. And it didn't take long for him to have some joy. As you said, he set up Goetze and then also teed up Axel Witsel for the fifth goal. And yeah, he was just a number of, just one of the standout performers today for Dortmund.
They were helped by some shocking Hanover defending at times, weren't they? Even in the first half at 0-0, Marco Reus put a chance over after Bakalorts had been caught in possession. And the second goal came from Ashraf Hakimi putting the Hanover defence under pressure as well. Was that down to, were those mistakes caused by Dortmund's pressing or simply poor defending full stop on Hanover's part?
Well, that second goal was just suicidal defending from Albinors, you know, and you just really have to feel for Brighton Rider because, you know, whatever your position is on him as a coach, I mean, when your players are making those individual mistakes in the position that they're in the table and the players, they're attacking influential players that are injured, you know, you just can't afford to be making those mistakes. And they dug their own grave today. They sort of hung in there for the first 20 minutes. You know, they looked okay. And Dortmund made a lot of mistakes that they weren't able to capitalise on. But, you know, once they sort of tried to play, then Dortmund just punished them. And they were ruthless, especially in the second half.
You're right. For 20 minutes, they did hang on quite well. But then there was that five-minute spell in the first half, wasn't there, where I think, yeah, first of all, we had the Reus chance that I mentioned that he put over. Moments later, he hit the post. And just moments after that, Hakimi, after a really big clever 1-2 with, I think it was with Guerrero, wasn't
it? Yeah.
Gave Dortmund the lead. Hakimi was really good, wasn't he? That was a really, really impressive performance, I thought.
It was, but it was also mixed in with some pretty bad errors. You know, he picked up a yellow card early on after a giveaway where he had to pull one of the players back. You know, and he lost the ball trying to dribble past a couple of guys on his own half, but he made a few key interceptions. He scored that first goal, as you mentioned, and he was instrumental in the second goal. So, you know, really sort of symptomatic of Dortmund as a whole. Some really sloppy play, some a lot of misplaced passes and some bad giveaways, but also, you know, some sumptuous play where they can just score out of nothing, especially when the opposition can give them some room, as Hanover did today in the second half.
Yeah, I spoke to Sebastian Kehl after the game and, you know, talking about precisely that with Ashraf Hakimi, how dangerous he is going forward. But Kehl said that they're well aware of the fact that he sometimes has a few tactical deficiencies in his game still. But he's still only 20, or I think he's 20 years old, isn't he?
Yeah.
And yeah, Kehl said they're still working on that with him. But he's nailed down that fullback spot, and certainly. An impressive talent going forward. As we speak on Saturday evening, that puts Borussia Dortmund 9 points clear of Bayern. Obviously, they play tomorrow against Stuttgart. Long way to go still, but how do you see the title race working out?
Well, it's in their own hands, you know, and I just wrote my piece. And the scary thing is for Bayern Munich and the Chasers that, you know, Dortmund had just so much improvement in them. You know, they were just so sloppy in the first quarter of an hour and 20 minutes. You know, they just have so much room for improvement. You know, when you consider that Paco Alcacer hasn't been fully fit in 6 months since he's moved to Dortmund, the fact that, Hakimi makes a few errors here and there, the fact that Witsel is still finding his feet in a way, although he is so influential and is so good. There's just so much room for improvement with the combination play between the likes of Delaney, You know, Guardado's just come back. You've still got your centre backs. You've got Weigl filling in there now with injuries to Zagadou and
Paco Alcácer still not started.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much improvement in Dortmund. So the fact that they're 9 points clear, might probably be six tomorrow, but the fact that they've got the title in their own hands, it's just a testament to the quality they have, and more so the coaching of Lucien Favre. But look, the title's theirs to lose. And, you know, they've certainly got a great chance. Bayern Munich are not going to give up, that's for sure. And that next game between the two teams is just going to be incredible. But, look, I really hope they do it. I hope Marco Reus gets to lift the title. You know, and they're certainly the favourites to do it, but still a long way to go, you know.
Dortmund fans are certainly confident. They're all bouncing around on the Südtribüne at full time, thinking who's going to be German champions, Borussia, BVB. But as we said, there is a long way to go. What game are you at next week? Because I fancy a lift back from Berlin.
I don't remember. I've looked at the fixtures, but I've got a couple of big road trips coming up soon. Actually, I'm going to do Augsburg, Hoffenheim, Frankfurt. Then I got a trip up north doing four games in a row. I think it's like Bremen, Leipzig, Hanover, Dusseldorf. So that's going to be epic, mate. So I can give you a ride back from Hanover if you want via Dusseldorf.
Cheers. You know. Cheers again, Matt.
All right, that was Matt Ford in Dortmund. All right, guys. So as we all know now, Andre Breitenreiter was fired after that game. Thomas Doll is his replacement. But before we get into all the everything surrounding Thomas Doll, let's start with Andre Breitenreiter first. Do we think this was a justified sacking based on the fact that they're in the bottom three and they haven't really got anything going so far this season?
I think it's justified in the end, isn't it? 11 points after 19 games is apparently an historic low for Hanover. Only won two games. I think despite the disastrous sporting situation that they're clearly in, Breitenreiter was probably put in a pretty difficult and arguably unfair position, I think, by the end. I think, I'm not sure we mentioned it last week, but there were rumours as early as Monday that the club bosses at Hanover, so the sporting director Horst Hertz, the club president Martin Kind, apparently the plan was already there to sack Breitenreiter.
Yeah, that was really strange.
Yeah, and by all accounts, well, according to some of the media reports, those plans were actually temporarily shelved because the media got wind of them, and Hanover then didn't want to give the impression that they were sacking Breitenreiter based purely on media reports. But Breitenreiter clearly knew about this. He's very close historically to Horst Held. They're good friends off the pitch as well. Yeah. And so he knew about this. So
yeah. When the two of them were together at Schalke, weren't
exactly,
they?
Exactly, yeah. And he, by the time he got to Dortmund there for an impossible must-win game, he was already a dead man walking. So I did feel a bit sorry for him. It could have gone... ironically, it wasn't that bad a performance for certain parts against Dortmund. They could have taken an early lead.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
They were undone
seven
by
minutes.
Some. Yeah, they were undone not just by the 7 minutes, but also by some shocking defensive mistakes. Slightly unlucky in the end, but he was already a dead man walking.
I think the thing about Breitenreiter that's interesting is, you know, we saw him at Schalke. And Hanover, obviously you've got to bear in mind that he's kind of a, I don't want to say a legend, but you know, he did win, I think I'm right in saying he won the German Cup with them as a player, right? So there's a strong connection with the club, this guy.
Yeah, he remained very popular among Hanover fans as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, losing an identity figure like that, it's not easy. I know that the fans of the club are probably pretty upset about where they are in the table, but quite frankly, they've probably got more things to worry about right now than their position in the Bundesliga. I mean, the club is in turmoil, and it's a bit difficult to look at what a new manager could do in that situation. It's always hard. Andre Breitenreiter is probably now, when you look at his career, you can see that he might not be a coach for the Bundesliga.
Yeah,
I mean, he seems to be the coach for sides looking to get promoted from the second division, maybe in the bottom half of the Bundesliga. But a lot of coaches that we've seen in recent years that look like they have potential to be something, and they get opportunities at bigger clubs, haven't been able to do that. You know, I'm thinking of Marcus Weinzierl as well, did a great job at Augsburg and then sort of stagnated a bit. Sometimes you get coaches who can't quite reach the same level when they go up a club or they go up a challenge, you know, and it seems like Breitenreiter is one of those.
Yeah. Felix, do you think that Breitenreiter right now is a Bundesliga coach? Do you think he would be, he'd be better off at taking an opening in the second division?
Well, right now I think he's going to think about basically reestablishing himself as a coach in general, and that's going to mean I would assume that's going to mean taking perhaps a zweite Bundesliga side.
Example, if you were Augsburg or someone like that who might part ways with your coach, is Andre Breitenreiter on your list of managers that you want, or coaches you
I
would want to take over?
I definitely think he should be on the list, because for many parts, Hannover didn't look, for instance, as bad as Cologne looked in the first half of last season. You can see that there are some foundations there. And again, as we've said right now, I think also both Berkey and Lucien Favre said after the game, that wasn't a bad Hannover game. Yeah, we should look at ourselves and see how we played, because Hannover...
You're right, Flash Pass Dortmund weren't brilliant either.
Yeah. But still, I mean, the Dortmund, top Dortmund figures said the result is lying in this case. Also, there are all sorts of circumstances, as we said, the club's in turmoil. Elas Bebou, the club's top scorer, has been injured since, November?
Yeah, Nikos Füllkrug. Yeah, I was going to bring that up next. This is a club that is arguably missing their best two attackers, and Elias Bebou.
And they had that whole thing with Jonathas as well, where he was like, there, not there, what are they doing with him? I think Felix is right to point out that things haven't exactly been on his side.
They've also lost Sané, they've lost Felix Klaus, they've lost Martin Hannig.
And for a team like that, when you lose like really important key figures, it becomes far more noticeable, far more quickly.
Martin Hannig is a good shout, because he went down with them into the second division and helped bring them back up to the first division. So
they're very much a talisman and an identification figure at Hannover. And there have been moves in the transfer market as well. Obviously, we've seen Wallace and Bobby Wood arrive from Hamburg, haven't we? Admittedly uninspiring, definitely. Slightly more inspiring, I think, was Nikolai Müller over Christmas, wasn't it? That was a winter transfer.
Yeah, that was a winter transfer.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Kevin Apkoguma was another big one.
Yeah, and I think Müller in particular was, if you can call it that, a standout player, slightly in the first half in Dortmund on Saturday. But issues there. One issue that I would raise regarding Breitenreiter, as popular as he is in Hannover, particularly among the fans, there were suggestions that he had caused a bit of a split in the dressing room by suggesting publicly that strengthening the squad in the transfer market was necessary. Doesn't necessarily send a good signal to the players you've already got when you're openly going out there saying, we need to bring more in, and the players you bring in are Wallace and Bobby Wood. What does that say about the current coach's thoughts of what he's got already?
Yeah, I mean, that's a problem. But I mean, on the other hand, I would say that he's also justified in saying it. Maybe the way in which he says it, I mean, also the players that you bring in, you're right to point out, if you're going to say something like that, then you've got to bring in better quality. You can't just say, we need to be better, and then bring in a striker who scores once every 25 games, and a midfielder who hasn't necessarily settled in terms of playing and maybe as a person here in Germany. So you've got all of those things to consider. If you bring in players that can deliver, and then the squad's going, actually, he said it and he's right, and now we're a better team.
But then you've got to ask yourself who's bringing those players in.
Yeah, exactly.
That's got to be held in this situation. So
it's funny, isn't it? Sporting directors rarely get held accountable for these things, mm-hmm. And obviously he's got a lot of responsibility to take as well. He's obviously worked with Breitenreiter before, but he's not going anywhere. He's staying. It's so often the sporting director, who will obviously have been involved in recruitment, he's not taking any heat for this, and he should.
I mean, I wonder too, is it just because of the nature of his position? He works much closer with Martin Kind and our Hannover CEO as well. I mean, maybe just because he has their ears and works with them more closely, maybe that's why he doesn't have to take the fall when things don't go wrong. So, but I definitely think that Horsfeld should be accountable with the moves that he's, especially with the moves that he made before the season. Bobby Wood. I mean, he's American, so I have to like him. But I just don't think that he's. I never really thought, even with Hamburg, he wasn't really cut out for the Bundesliga. And bringing him in to be a backup striker, I think, was fine. I mean, Andre Breitenreiter can't control that Nikolas Füllkrug hasn't been fit all season.
No, of course.
But when he becomes your primary option, I think backup strikers overall in the Bundesliga are really, really hard to acquire, Because, I mean, if you look at, for example, for Hertha Berlin, I mean, David Selke was brought in to basically...
But the problem is...
Because so many of them played the 4-5-1 or 4-3-3. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, play with one up top.
But the problem is that if you bring in a player who's basically a backup striker, who's effectively of a second division quality, then you're going to have to expect your side to be playing second division quality. And that's what Hannover are playing at the moment.
Yeah,
I think there's a much bigger picture to look out of Hannover as well, though. Because, I mean, we're talking about the messages that Brighton Wright was sending publicly. Well, those messages were directed at Martin Kint.
Yeah.
And Martin Kint is sat there arguing that, well, this is the most expensive Hannover squad that's ever existed. So he's there saying, I've put all this money in, which in turn links into the his more general arguments about taking over the club and the abolition of 50+1. He's there arguing that he's put so much money in that he therefore would have a right to take over the club, and that's the argument that's been obviously going on and on for the past 2 or 3 years at Hannover, and we've talked about it on the podcast. But the whole thing only serves to destabilize the club. You've got all this background noise going on. You've got legal avenues being explored by Kint. You've got fans organizing themselves against the club president. Part of the organisation has been withdrawing their support and boycotting for half of last season. The whole club, from top to bottom, finds itself in an extremely difficult situation, which is going to make it difficult for any coach coming in, let alone a fiery character like Thomas Doll.
I mean, it's also a contradiction, though. I mean, if Martin Kint is saying he's responsible for assembling the most expensive squad in Hannover's history... Well, and they're not doing very well, so he wants to change things so that he can take over the club and abolish 50+1. Well, okay, but what about all the other clubs in the Bundesliga that seem to be doing just fine? I mean, Dusseldorf have about 5p to their name, and they won 4 on a bounce. Freiburg continually have no money, and yet manage to get a side that continues stays
Mainz.
In the league. Mainz, again, yeah, great shout. Mainz, there are so many teams where that argument from Kint is just not... Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Let's go to the change that they've made. I mean, Thomas Doll taking over this club. He's returning to the Bundesliga after more than a decade coaching abroad. He's coached in Turkey. He's coached in Saudi Arabia. And he spent the last 5 seasons at Ferencváros in Budapest in Hungary. As you mentioned, Matt, he is somewhat of a fiery character, has definitely a strong history of press conference comments and stuff like that. What do we make of this appointment, and what do we think that this is a situation that he in particular can salvage?
I think to put it simply, adding fuel to the fire. I really do. Yeah. He's not worked in Germany for about 9 or 10 years. Even those spells at Hamburg and Dortmund didn't work out particularly. I mean, okay, there were limited successes. He did qualify. Was it Hamburg for the UEFA Cup via the Intertoto?
Intertoto. Any mention of that?
Absolutely no idea.
Nostalgia. Love it.
And he got Dortmund to the cup final, but whilst finishing 13th or mid-table somewhere, I believe. He's going back a bit, and all the while ranting at the media in his press conferences, and his most, the most recent public appearance on German Sky ended in an on-screen argument with a Spiegel journalist after he said that Thomas Müller should have taken his wife Lisa home and told her to keep her mouth shut in future after her Instagram post, and he was then called out and accused of effectively sexist behaviour then. And John, you were explaining before that apparently he's in his first press conference or his first comments as Hannover coach now, he's demanded a return to the players referring to him as boss or Mister.
Yeah, which is a strange thing. And again, I think Matt's hit the nail on the head there. This is definitely fuel to the fire. This club does not need a character like this to step into the situation right now. You got 11 points from 19 games and you want a guy to come in here and be like, yeah, just to let you know I'm the boss, yeah? You better call me the boss. Do you think that's going to help the situation?
Yeah. No, I mean, I followed that press conference on Twitter and... You just noticed that most of the talk wasn't about tactics. It wasn't about football. It was about mentality. It was about getting the players going. It's about getting more confidence in them. And one must wonder whether such a character is the person to do that. Mm. Like being stricter, being more like treating players more in an army-esque regime, I would say. That's not the way you would treat a team that is in need of confidence. You need to make them believe in themselves. You don't need them feel like they're in preparations for an army service. I don't think that's the way to go.
Yeah, it's also not the way to manage a team in 2019, whether you're in the relegation zone or going for Europe. You know, it's been quite obvious in recent years that military approach to management is just not successful anymore. You can't put pressure on players like that. And I'm keen to see whether Thomas Doll is actually up to speed with how to manage in a top five league in 2019. I mean, obviously, a success in Hungary shouldn't be discounted just because it's a minor league.
Won the league, a couple of cup titles.
Absolutely. He's got some success there that gives justification to the appointment. But as a character, the question is how he is now and how he'll handle the media, because if he gets on the wrong side of them early, that's not going to do them well.
We also have to consider that there was a piece in Kicker last week talking about basically how Breitenreiter was just trying. He's tried almost everything to get this squad back on track. He's tried some tough love. He's tried some encouraging love. He's tried a bunch of different formations. And he still couldn't get most out of the squad. So if a tough love approach hasn't worked under Breitenreiter, I mean, how do we expect it to work under Thomas Doll?
Yeah, and in addition to that, I mean, we're talking about bringing the confidence back into the squad, back into the players. Again, I followed that press conference on Twitter, and one of the things Hoss Held said, he said that Thomas Doll is, and I quote, what was the term? Stress resistant. Given his previous track record on press conferences, I'm not entirely sure that's the case. And that already makes you wonder whether Horst Held is
a spin doctor.
Is it the right appointment?
But yeah, by the way, like you said, Matt, earlier, I mean, Martin Kind wanted to bring in Mirko Slomka, who is a legend in Hannover. It was the last European season under...
But hasn't had a successful stint in management since then.
Yeah, but you wonder... But what I'm wondering is, this seems to be Horst Held's guy in Thomas Doll. So I wonder if this doesn't work out, what happens?
Oh, if this doesn't work out, then, you know, Hannover get relegated, both Doll and Held go. I'm sure that Held will have to take some responsibility at some point, because you can't just keep going through managers and expect nobody else to take responsibility. But I'd be interested, who would you have gone for? I mean, I know that it's difficult to think about managers who are now available, but I mean, there are some names out there that maybe would have made more sense. And given the situation, maybe Hannover could have also made an internal appointment. I mean, you know, this is, look at the realistic situation here. We've just talked about all of the turmoil off the pitch. I can't see them staying up whoever they appoint. They're going to be in the relegation battle. They'll almost certainly be in the playoff at best. Right, it will take a miracle for them to turn it around. Dusseldorf will come back down. It will be close, but they'll be in and about based on injuries, based on confidence. Because even if they do get that back, it's still going to be a struggle. I think there are enough sides who are riding high on confidence now to see things through between March and April. So why not take a hit in that sense and plan long term to come straight back up and maybe rebuild the club that way? I mean, would that be something that you guys would have thought of? Or maybe there's another name that you're thinking of that you would have appointed?
There's a few names always hovering around there, aren't there? But I think given that... The appointment itself, I think, is a step back. I think we all agree that the sporting situation was untenable under Breitenreiter. But I think the move to Doll is certainly a step back in terms of managerial type and tactical style. Another name being mentioned was obviously the classics in Felix Magath, which would have been even worse. More stabilizing factors, purely as a short-term measure, looking at the relegation battle that John was outlining, would have been a Typhoon Korkut or even a Peter Sturger. However, whether that would appeal to Hannover from an offensive point of view,
who knows if Typhoon Korkut would even go back
exactly
there.
I doubt that. Marcus Gisdol, Christian Titz, all slightly younger managers on the market at the moment. I can't help but think there were more progressive options out there for Hannover. But in the short term, I think they're banking on a more on a stricter, more martial regime under Doll. I think that's a gamble to whether that's ever enough.
Yeah, and do you take a short-term appointment? Because we're talking about short-term appointments. If you take a short-term appointment, surely you take someone who maybe has got a better track record, I don't know, in that situation, or a more recent track record. Or if you take a long-term appointment, you say, well, whatever happens, we want this guy because he matches the philosophy of the club.
Bruno Labbadia is not available, mate. Yeah.
Shade.
Also, if you think about it, like, I'm going to side with the option of bringing someone from within the club, mostly due to the fact that... Hannover is a club in turmoil in every sense of the word. I mean, fans are losing faith in every single leading position in the club. Fans are disillusioned not by everything that's been going on, especially with Kind, but I think also by the sporting situation, such an internal appointment of someone that knows the club from within, that knows who are the talents are worthy of maybe bringing into the first team, someone that might develop an identity that Hannover fans can identify with. And identity is something that exists in Hannover among the fans. It's something that many German fans do not seem to accept, but they have their own.
Hannover does mean something.
Yeah, exactly.
not just it's a congregation city.
You're right. We saw the effect that Christian Titz had in Hamburg, albeit a little too late. I tend to agree. I think that would have been a more progressive option. But whatever the option was going to be, at least why now in January?
But wouldn't it have
been done before?
This is the time where they should have kept Daniel Stendel, who's now at Barnsley, doing a great job at Barnsley. Yeah. Right. I mean, it's Barnsley, but he's doing a great job. And he was given a head coaching position because Hannover thought he wasn't the right guy. And he was the guy they got rid of to bring in Brighton Reiter. Now, admittedly, he got them promoted, but if I'm right, when Brighton Reiter came in, Hannover were already in the top or near the top of the table anyway. So it's not like Schindler was struggling.
Also operating with a budget. I mean, similar to Hamburg and Cologne this year, Stuttgart and Hannover.
Like, so it's almost like Hannover had their guy, their young internal appointment who'd come through the ranks, who matches the identity, who understands the city, who understands the fans, and they were like, no, we don't want you.
In the same way that Stuttgart have might regret dropping Hannes Wolf.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. In the same way.
That's a good shout, yeah.
It's the same, and you look at the benefits that it can have, and the best benefit of that is, or the best example of that is Julian Nagelsmann. Internal appointment.
Oh, you could also say Florian Kohfeldt too.
Yeah, Florian Kohfeldt. Yeah, but I mean, absolutely. That was third time lucky. It's not like Bremen were guilty of not trying. They had Skripnik, they had Nuri, and then they had...
Well, even Alexander Norby was an example of how some internal knowledge and understanding of the club can have, at the very least, a short-term
hugely underrated perception, for sure.
So, since we're on discussion of other coaches around the league, there's only been two coach sackings so far this season, and normally there is a lot more at this point. Last year, I believe that there were 7 sackings.
It was really high. I think it was 7, yeah.
Yeah, there was, and there's been multiple in the past, more than 2, definitely. Do we think that there are more coaches that could be on the hot seat right now, considering where Augsburg are or where Nuremberg is? Or
let's look at the table, though, right? Nuremberg are going down and they know it, so they knew that when they got promoted.
Right, exactly.
Dusseldorf just had their back and forth about whether they wanted
Funkel. Was gone, wasn't
he? It's like, do we want him, do we not want him? And then they give him a contract and they won 4 on the bounce. So he's staying irrespective of what happens.
Right.
Augsburg, maybe. Manuel Baum has been there a while. That's an interesting one, especially in light of what...
What Martin Hinteregger said,
I mean, that's probably more Martin Hinteregger.
So Martin Hinteregger, by the way, for those who don't know, he said basically he was asked, basically he said the direct quote was, "I cannot say anything positively or negatively about the coach."
Yeah.
Or he said, "I can't say anything positively, nor will I say anything negatively about them."
I mean, in that case, just don't say anything, Martin.
Yeah. He also said after that that throughout all of 2018, he said it was a downward spiral at Augsburg, which I'm not sure is completely true. I mean, towards the end of last season, at least Manuel Baum seemed to have the team playing.
Also, it's Augsburg. Let's remember who they are.
What more do you expect?
I can't think of anyone else on the table that I would fire, though, based on position. I mean, I might not have given Markus Weinzel the job at Stuttgart, but...
Yeah. I think Manuel Baum's job, I think, is safer at the moment, especially since they brought in Jens Lehmann to be his co-trainer. Well, I mean, they wouldn't have done that if they wouldn't have given a new co-trainer if they thought that he was.
Can't wait for the fireworks there. Bring on Baum.
He's received the backing of Stefan Reuter, the sport director there. There's also an explicit support from him from Andre Hahn as well. I think said the team's right behind him. It wasn't such a bad performance where Gladbach either. The 2 goals fell in the final, 10,
they also got
minutes.
Completely done over by a refereeing decision.
They did. They were fuming about that. Baum's comments were interesting, weren't they?
He
labelled the whole refereeing body as amateurs.
Yeah. He said, like, I can't believe the referee missed that. And
it was an offside call, right? It was an offside call in Gladbach's 2-0 win over Augsburg that
left Baum furious.
Yeah, that left Baum very, very agitated.
But who else in the league have we got? Right. Frankfurt, no, they're flying high. Mainz, Sandro Schwarz, doing a great job. I actually thought they were going to go down.
I think I thought they were going to go down too.
Wolfsburg, Labbadia, still got it going on. The moose hair, wonderful. Leverkusen, well, he's just arrived, so can't do anything about that.
There was the third new coaching appointment, not the second.
But I can't think of Any other team?
Anyone who might be at risk?
Yeah, or that we... Yeah,
the only one is maybe Köln now, but also I think Nuremberg.
Yeah, they've accepted
the fate. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's exactly that concept that we were talking about at Hannover. Someone who came from within the club, that knows the club, that is loved by the fans, I think appreciated by the players. I don't think it's going to...
Also, they have nothing. What can they do?
You know?
Like, exactly, the team is obviously not equipped.
He's the long shot, I would say.
I wonder, despite being a mid-season appointment, how long Weinziel can actually hold on. He's lost 9 out of 12 now. Mm. And I know you can't read too much into a thrashing away at Bayern Munich, but some of the defending was diabolical. I'm thinking particularly of the first goal and the third goal.
If Gonzalez bangs that in instead of hitting the post.
Yeah, true. Right. No, there were chances, but they didn't help themselves at the back. The ball watching, having absolutely no idea where the onrushing Bayern players were. Mm. Too much chasing the ball blindly around the box. Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the situation in Stuttgart, by the way, is another situation with a sporting director that keeps on making
mistakes,
decisions that many regard as mistakes, yet isn't being held accountable by anyone, the fans included, by the way.
Yeah.
I think only now, after the Weinziel situation started unfolding and they started seeing that they're keeping on losing, it doesn't change. Some of their fans that I know started wondering whether Reschke is really responsible for that situation. And I think that's a situation that many Bundesliga clubs and fans sort of have in common. The coach is like the automatic person to blame almost. But Schalke is another good example of that. But the sporting director very rarely gets that criticism.
Very true.
Looking even higher up the hierarchy than that, obviously Stuttgart are a step further on than Hannover in terms of separating a sporting division, they've effectively given control to Daimler, isn't it? Mm-hmm. The sort of control that Martin Kind would also like to have, and that was done with Stuttgart members being promised that this is the best for the financial and sporting future of the club, and now look at them.
All right, so in the Bundesliga this weekend, it was the 74th anniversary of the closing of the Auschwitz concentration camp. There was a campaign around a lot of fan groups in Germany. It was the hashtag We Remember campaign in remembrance of the Holocaust. And Matt, you wrote a terrific commentary. For those who haven't read it, I think you should go to his Twitter profile and find it, because I think it's definitely important reading. Essentially arguing that it's that football fans in a way reflect German society, and which I thought was really interesting. It was a really interesting point. Now, Matt and Felix, you guys go to grounds almost every weekend. So Felix, I want to start with you. Do you from what you've seen and based on all the places that you've been, would you agree with that sentiment that the fans clubs that are ingrained as these clubs represent the areas that they come from and the parts of German society?
I'll say even more than that. They represent many of the things that are good about German society. They represent a sense of activism. They represent knowledge about history, knowledge about current politics, current affairs, what's been going on locally, nationally, and in many cases internationally, Bayern and Qatar being the prime example. The answer is yes plus even. However, despite that being something that every single match goer in Germany knows, I don't think there's I think 90% of matchgoers in Germany would agree with what I'm saying, just because the experience is week in, week out. Apart from Holocaust Remembrance Day, which was commemorated by so many fan groups, so many ultra groups, the bad ultra group that everybody keeps on talking about how violent and bad they are, they kept on commemorating the memory of the Holocaust in a fashion that I was, in cases, I'm Jewish, I'm Israeli, I'm a family of Holocaust survivors from Tunisia, and sometimes it made me very, very emotional, I have to say, seeing that commemoration. I do have to say that I get the feeling from talking to the, let's call it the average German, the people that don't necessarily have such strong interest in football as we do, I get the feeling that many people just don't know that. Many people just assume that everything they read, every piece of information they consume from the media, from the authorities, And it's partly partly is the media to blame here, but that's a completely different question. I think many people just do not have an interest of questioning that information, and that's a real shame, because as far as I'm concerned, as a person who's interested in football, as a person who's interested also in politics, in society, in current affairs, and as a Jewish person living in Germany, seeing football fans going to matches week in, week out, makes me feel a lot more confident and a lot better about living in this country, whereas some of the developments in the general public, in the general, like in politics, make me like worried.
It's interesting, Jonathan, because there has been a lot of conversation recently, especially as players become more vocal about taking politics out of sports. That's one thing I think that we all can agree on. But what I think is interesting too is that if you go to a Bundesliga stadium, it's the exact opposite. It seems like people want to have these conversations, want to call out their clubs for not only how their club is run, but maybe a political injustice that they think that, or just an injustice that they think that is that their club has done.
Yeah.
For example, the Bayern Munich fans protesting their training camp in Doha.
And you see it every week, whether it's in the Bundesliga or the second division or the third league. I mean, every week there's a different issue at a different club that fans are there voicing their concerns over. And they absolutely do reflect parts of German society where groups of people come together and are part of a family for 90 minutes and they can put their voice forward as one. I mean, we're fortunate to be sat on the couch of two people who've got the biggest brains when it comes to fan culture and identity in Germany. And to listen to them and to watch what they uncover every weekend is really insightful, because the media image that you get from bigger newspapers is so often these are the people that are making the sport, you know, die, and they're the problem with the sport. And actually, that couldn't be more wrong. You know, in most cases you're talking about people who have seriously invested in the well-being of their club, and that's partly because of the way that their culture is in football in Germany and the way that they were raised. 50+1 is an extension of that. This is a result of that. If you have a culture in which people are given the opportunity to invest and care and develop a club, then they will respond with comments that match the culture and the philosophy that they want. So if those things don't happen, then they'll say, hold on, this isn't the club that we wanted. This isn't the club that we've decided to build. And therefore you move forward together. You don't move forward as customer and club. You move forward as a family. And it's not just a marketing phrase, but it is actually a truth. You know, and I think that's something that you see in a lot of grounds on the weekend.
Yeah, and I mean, I just one experience that I have to share. I wrote a piece about a Hertha Berlin project, this for Holocaust Memorial Day for an American magazine. And I remember talking to Matt a couple of months ago. That sentence of Matt really was in my head the whole time, that sometimes things that look very obvious to us are not obvious to the general public. In this case, I literally had to explain how German football works. 50+1, Eingetragene Verein, everything. Yeah. I had to explain. And when I sort of reviewed the piece after I read it, I was like, there is something here that's very different than many other places in Europe and in the world when it comes to world football. And I think that German society doesn't appreciate it enough in many cases.
Well, I think what's interesting, Matt, is I went to, a few years ago, I went to the sports museum in Cologne. And one thing that I guess I never realized about German clubs is many of them started not just as sports for gymnasts or for footballers or for whatever other sports that they wanted to represent, but also represented a place where people could go and talk about politics. Mm-hmm. So it seems like these clubs in their history have politics ingrained in their foundation.
Yeah, I mean, to try and like bring it right down to its bare bones, the very fact that football takes place in a live arena, in a single space, bringing together so many people from a community, more so than any other, you know, football being by numbers the most popular sport in Europe, if not, we had the world, which brings together an unmatched number of people in a certain space, that absolutely inextricably and inevitably makes it a place of culture and a place where politics are going to happen. The text that you referred to before that I wrote was partly based on a comment that Hans-Joachim Watzke, the Dortmund CEO, made in an interview earlier this month, where he said that football mirrors society better than anything else in this country. And I think that is absolutely true, whether you like it or not. The people who you stand next to at a football ground in whatever city in Germany or anywhere else are by its very nature going to be a reflection, a pretty accurate reflection, of the community from which it comes, and that for positive and for negative. In Dortmund's case, Watzke made the point that 2% of the population of the city of Dortmund, which is not the richest city in the world, as I pointed out earlier, speaking to Adam, vote for the far right. So Watzke said, logically, that suggests that 2% of our capacity, about 1,600 people, on any given match day, are going to have those sorts of views. So it works positively, and negatively, but it's something that can't be avoided. And German fans, as Felix has pointed out time and time again, seem to be well aware of that. And that comes from a deep feeling of belonging and ownership of their club, which is not just a feeling, it's also legally true. Dortmund,
it's something tangible.
It is, yeah. It's legally a fact that Borussia Dortmund, Borussia Dortmund's separated football division might be a company listed on the list on the stock exchange. It's often an accusation levelled at Borussia Dortmund, but it still remains under the control of a hierarchy which is ultimately voted for by the members. Club's mm-hmm. membership. Now, all right, that's all in theory. You can always throw out and say only 1,000 or whatever people actually turned up and voted. That's a separate issue. That is also a problem. But in theory, the clubs do legally belong to their supporters, and therefore they have a right to lend their voice from a community in which the clubs are based. That comes to light on various issues week in, week out. Some of them are purely ultra-specific issues, like the use of pyrotechnics. Some of them are global issues, such as Holocaust Memorial Day.
Yeah, and I think also when it comes to the knowledge that fans have here, that people that are also football fans have here about their society, about what's been going on, for me, it all comes, the case that epitomizes it for me is the new police laws in Germany. A series of new police laws have been introduced in a couple of German states, including the two biggest, like Bavaria and Nordrhein-Westphalia, affect something in excess of 35 million people, if I'm not mistaken, at any given moment. Laws that give police very, very extensive laws that some people argue those extensive powers are the most extensive police powers since 1945, meaning the end of the Second World War. And then you could see how involved those organized football fans that we keep on hearing about are in their communities, in their in local and national lives. I think there was a protest in Düsseldorf in the summer. I think I heard from, I spoke to one of the organizers, and if I'm not mistaken, the number they named was something between 35 and 40% of the people that attended this protest were football fans from a couple of clubs. The same happened this weekend in Saxony. Again, an introduction of a very, very strict police law. Clubs from fans that absolutely hate each other, Magdeburg, Dynamo Dresden, Chemie Leipzig, clubs that you put them in one place and for political, historical reasons, might not be nice. But at the end of the day, they knew it's about more than just us. It's about civil rights. It's about making sure that I remember there was one instance of Dynamo Dresden and ultras from Zwickau walking together with a banner that says we've been free for 30 years, meaning since the fall of the wall.
By the way, Zwickau and Dresden, I mean Dresden is a clear East German city, but so is Zwickau. I think
absolutely.
They said 30 years of freedom, they're also best mates, aren't they,
they walked together in front of that protest with a massive banner that said 30 years of freedom are not enough, meaning this police law is a step back. And that just goes to show the social responsibility and the amount of involvement that football fans have, for which they don't get enough credit, in my opinion.
All right, let's get to our last section. But before we do that, we just wanted to plug one more thing. The three of us, Jonathan, Matt, and I, are going to Freiburg at the end of February. And we're going to be going to a Freiburg match, doing a Freiburg pilgrimage before they switch stadiums. So if any of you are going to be in the area that time, if any of you want to come to the area to meet with us, it's going to be the weekend. I think the Saturday is February 23rd. That's when the game is, their game against Augsburg. We're going to be trying.
Huge game. Augsburg. Freiburg.
There's still a little bit planning to go into the trip as a whole, but we still intend to do it. So if you guys want to mark that on your calendars and come out to see us,
come on down.
Yeah, we very much appreciate it. So let's get to our Shout from Rosette section. Thank you all for voting in our poll this week. I know we haven't done one in a while, but it seemed like a good time as any to do it with so many different things going on. But the topic you guys voted for was the most watchable team in the Bundesliga so far this season. So I think the best way to do this is if we each pick one. And we can all go in alphabetical order. So if this person before you picked the one that you would have chosen, you can either add to it or you can just pick another one as well. So since Matt Ford, it's your last name, is alphabetical. So oh, okay. Ford, Harding, and then oh, wow. Tom's
it. It's like vocal. We're in school.
H. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. H comes after G. Yeah.
So, Matt, especially since you said before that you had one that you probably don't think anybody else would have chosen.
I have a controversial one, which I would not have said at the start of the season. So my it's not Augsburg, and it's definitely I wanted to get this off my chest. It's definitely not Schalke. They are winding me up this season.
Yeah.
So much potential, and I was so impressed with Tedesco last season. This year they're just winding me up. So sort it out, Schalke. My choice is purely short term based on the past 2 weeks, and it's Leverkusen, and that's down to Peter Bosch. It's only been two games, one of which was a loss. But after that 1-0 defeat to Gladbach, Peter Bosch's response was, we're going to attack more, which they did, and then won 3-0 away at Wolfsburg. And Peter Bosch's response to that was, we missed too many chances, we need to attack more. So I think that's
a recipe for excitement.
That's yeah. fine.
Hashtag hot take.
Yeah, that's fine in my book. So yeah, Leverkusen.
Next week, Leverkusen Bayern.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. No, I think that's an excellent choice. I mean, I think it's Peter Bosch's appointment. We haven't really dove deep into it last week when you were in Leverkusen, Matt. But I think we haven't really talked about it. But I think he's a perfect coach for that
it
squad
be
because
you just play all the attacking players.
Exactly. So yeah, I think that's
Jonathan
a very
Tarr is
all out
feeling
attack on football manager yeah. in real life.
Yeah,
like, Jonathan well, Tarr is feeling lonely. He's feeling lonely.
Yeah, or he'll have like the new Julian Weigl role. He'll have to like play higher up the field. Jonathan, what's yours?
I think I'm going to say Eintracht Frankfurt because we talked about this the other day. I think the front three, I haven't seen a front three that exciting outside of Bayern and Dortmund in a very long time.
Leverkusen?
Yeah, but Leverkusen's Sorry. Front three isn't like consistent.
Leverkusen's you know? Front three is a front two and yeah. whoever else is in form.
Yeah.
Watching Rebic, Jovic and Haller has just been fantastic. I think when you look at the fact that Adi Hütter took this team that was a largely defensive team and made them a super attacking team. That makes them really exciting to watch. They seem to score almost every chance that they get. Generally, it's just, you know, often in previous seasons, you've looked at the schedule and you've been like, oh, Frankfurt, Bremen. Cool. Right. Okay. Can predict maybe a 1-0 or a 0-0 or something, you know, a tough result. This weekend, it was a really entertaining game, and Frankfurt again, just going forward, those three just absolutely electric to watch. So yeah, Frankfurt for me.
Yeah, they looked like that defense was getting quite the workout though.
Yeah, but I mean, it's exciting to see teams that sort of say, okay, we haven't got the best defense, so let's not play to our weakness, let's play to our strength, let's just go forward and see how many goals we can score, and if we win 4-3, that's okay. I mean, there's an argument to be made that these three players are the most exciting thing to happen to the Bundesliga outside of Bayern and Dortmund narratives in the last 5 years.
Felix, do you have one?
I have a couple, actually, but you already took Frankfurt from
me. Oh, sorry, mate. I know, it's a special
very,
place
very
in your heart.
Sad.
I know.
Very, very sad.
Feel free to add anything, though, if I've missed.
Nothing. Everything you said is absolutely
Yeah, we on. Talked about Frankfurt a few weeks ago, though, and we were raving about, I think it was at the beginning, too, of this attacking trio's cycle.
Yeah.
So,
So anyways, I'm going to go with another team, and I'm going to rely on the last couple of weeks. That's also going to be a hot take, but I'm going to say Bayern Munich.
Oh, none of us have said Dortmund. Unreal.
Yeah, I know.
Dortmund's too easy.
Just think about it. In this round, in this round of people, Bayern Munich is the controversial choice for the most fun team to watch.
I like it.
Says a lot about the Tribune podcast.
Why Bayern?
And its stuff.
Why Bayern?
They've been scoring like...
Seven goals in the last two.
Even more than that. I think I counted like 18 goals in the last five or six games.
Ooh.
They've been scoring for fun. They've been looking confident again. And the qualities they have is just unmatched in the Bundesliga. On their day, they're just unstoppable. And I think there were moments that it looked like things are coming into place for them again. I enjoyed watching them yesterday. It wasn't the most brilliant Bayern game.
I was going to ask you about that because I thought in that game they did show signs of that dominance, but there was a passage of play in the middle of it where I think they completely lost their head. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was a bit like, you know, we're talking about the Dortmund game not being perfect earlier, and that is true. But I didn't get the feeling in the Dortmund game I didn't get the same feeling that I got in the Bayern game, which was there was a period of play there that if Bayern had been playing someone better than Stuttgart, that would have been a different result.
Oh, absolutely. But on at the same time, I can argue, just because it's like hashtag hot take, at the same time, I can argue that Bayern knew who they're facing. They knew who they're playing.
Also valid.
And it's going to be a long season for them. So having known that they're going to play... Like they're gonna face Liverpool in a bit, and
so gotta play Dortmund.
Exactly. I mean, they gotta keep it balanced. But given that they're gonna keep it balanced, they've been scoring and they've been on form. And for me, they've also been fun to watch.
Yeah, right.
So there you go.
There you go. What about you, Davis?
Yeah, I think Borussia Dortmund, like we said, is a pretty easy one. So I'm going to go with one that...
I love that. We've all not gone for probably the most exciting Dortmund team in like the last 5 years.
I mean, it's easy to pick the team that's at the top of the table as the most entertaining
sure.
team to watch.
Hashtag hipster tribune. Yeah. Yeah.
Although Schalke played most of last season in second place.
I've been impressed with ninth this year.
Yeah, this is when Davis goes, Dusseldorf, guys, there's a hidden magic.
No, I think the other side of that Frankfurt game, I think Werder Bremen is
thank
what
you for
was.
Sure it is. There
and
it
not,
is.
And not just because of this season.
Not just because you know I love them.
Yeah, not just because I know
you
love them.
Love
absolutely.
Bremen. Let's talk about
but that. But I think, I mean, if you look 3 years ago, they could not string two passes together. Yeah. And it looked they looked atrocious. Mm. But now what Florian Kohfeldt has done, he's made them into an interesting attacking team. Mm. You know, we're at the point where you could have Yuya Osako on the wing, you could have Johannes Eggestein on the wing, you could have Josh Sargent on the wing. But as long as Max Kruse, as long as Davy Klaassen is in the team, as long as Philip Bargfrede, who's back from injury, and I think is an underrated player, as long as he's in the team, they can at least get something going forward. And you saw that in that game. They took the lead twice in that game. And it wasn't until a Ludwig Augustinsson strange handball on the box.
What is he doing there?
Yeah.
Ludwig,
that,
mate.
Yeah, that conceded that equalizer. So they have not been consistent this season. But
they're fun to watch.
It's also
a lot of fun.
But also, it's also fun for me to see. Oh, where is Max Kruse? Is he in defense in the build-up play? Is he leading the line now? Yeah. It's like basically a Where's Waldo in football.
And we were talking about this the other day. I mean, okay, he's not been amazing for long enough, but I do still think he's worth being given a shot. Why is Maxi Eggestein not being given a shot?
Let's
for Germany?
Take a moment and appreciate that goal.
Yeah, I mean, the goal was a goal. And there's something to
ridiculous.
Be
ridiculous,
unbelievable goal. But there is something to be said about narratives, right? If that's Lionel Messi, that's like goes viral. Everyone talks about how great he is, and I'm not saying he's not great. He is, but because it's Maximilian Eggestein, everyone's like, oh, cool. What's next? Scroll next thing. Show me. And actually, hold on a moment. It's an incredible goal for a player that has been gradually improving, like consistently improving over the last two or three seasons. And that's why I think it's a fair conversation to have about him getting a chance in a Germany game. He won't, because Joachim Löw already has his list for the next three squads in the next 4 years. But.
Yeah, I do have to say a remark about that, because before that Frankfurt game, Baumann was the Werder Bremen sporting director,
he said the same thing.
Was asked about Maxi Eggestein and his future.
Yeah.
And he said that as far as we're concerned, his future is with us.
Yeah.
Obviously, the usual. We're not. We don't know.
We're not selling.
Happen. But he is really looking forward. That's his word. He's looking forward to the future with Maxi Eggestein in the team. And I think that's the sort of players that Bremen can build around
for sure.
Just want to say, I think that if we'd have asked this question at this time last season, we'd have been struggling to name anyone really. And I think for a few seasons especially, and there's tactical reasons for it, the Bundesliga was becoming quite difficult to watch. We had a spate of managers.
Look at Schalke last season.
Well, yeah, precisely. Well, yeah, the fact that Schalke could go so far by playing that football.
Second,
so
that's the reason they could finish second.
Exactly. No, and I mean, there's pros and cons to the group of young managers which are coming through in the Bundesliga and being given a chance. And I think one of the cons the past couple of years has been that so many teams have been relying on the idea of not having the ball and just counter-attacking. And I'm not saying it's completely changed this year. A lot of managers still do rely on that, on those sort of tactics. But I think there has been a change in that more teams are slightly more comfortable, slightly more proficient on the ball. We've not mentioned RB, Gladbach or Hertha.
Goodness gracious,
this season, who have also shown improvements in that sense of being better and more comfortable on the ball. And that has just, I think in general, led to the Bundesliga being slightly more watchable. from a football point of view. And so I expect the Bundesliga on the line any moment to offer me a marketing job.
It's also, I think, the highest
hello, is that my fault?
Highest scoring league on average among the top
the only ranking the only ranking that matters. Diddy.
Yes.
D-I-D.
Up the Dembo. fun to watch. The tactical developments this season have been fun.
A lot to choose from.
We also didn't even talk about Gladbach. You're so right. Under Dieter Hecking, I think I wrote this in the bulletin on the weekend. Like, nobody talks about Gladbach because it's Dieter Hecking and he's like not a young, trendy coach.
Yeah.
And he just looks like Ray Liotta. But what is it?
That's the hot take of this episode.
I mean, it's not a hot take, it's just truth. But nobody's talking about how exciting they are to watch. I mean, you know, this is a side that before Bayern had won on the weekend, on Sunday, they were second. You know? This isn't one of those...
Exciting to watch in the second half anyway. We were talking to a colleague of ours.
Yeah, that's true. First half.
Gladbach are great to watch, but just first half, stay in the pub.
Yeah. I'm sure he did.
Yeah, and I mean, also you can see many of the sides in the bottom of the table are also playing great football. I mean, Düsseldorf for one example. Yeah.
They have their moments.
Exactly. I mean, they're going for it.
I think they're more of a boot it forward as far as possible.
Yeah, but I mean, let's. That's Bayern.
Fun.
Hey,
if it works, give it to Luka Bakio.
They got a point in Munich playing that way.
If it works and it's attacking and it's fun, it's high scoring. We as neutrals or as journalists or whatever it is,
their fans are probably. Imagine if you're a Düsseldorf fan in Munich and you just see your team throw three long balls up and Luka Bakio scores all three. I'm sure you're not going, guys, calm down. We're not.
Exactly.
This isn't the way we want to play.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's not your response.
It's not in our DNA.
It's probably limbs going everywhere. You're probably throwing yourself onto something.
I know one Fortuna Düsseldorf fan who actually framed her ticket from Borussia Dortmund at home. That's the sort of effect that these games have on people. And I think also credit should be given also to coaches in the lower parts of the league,
sure,
because they're not held back. They're playing football. I mean, people keep talking about how Streich is doing it over the years, playing entertaining football, but still managing to get the points needed to keep Freiburg
in the
league.
I love Streich. You guys know how much I approve of.
If there's a but, I'm going to walk out.
But I will say this.
I was feeling.
I will say this. I think Freiburg have been helped, like a lot of sides in the Bundesliga, they're not alone, by the fact that almost every year there have consistently been two teams that have been decidedly worse than them. I mean, I'm not saying that there have been Freiburg teams that have been worthy of relegation. They've obviously done enough. But every year you can be like, yeah, look at that Düsseldorf team. Look at that Nuremberg team. Look at that Hannover team. You're like, yeah, that's three. They'll be safe. I mean, in a league where if I would say at the top, if it had... I mean, we can argue now that there are three, maybe four teams that are consistent in the league at the moment. If we give Gladbach that spot, if we had a top six or a top seven that was consistent, then I reckon Freiburg would be in more trouble more regularly than they are. That's not to take away from him. You know how I feel about striking Freiburg, but
Yeah, what a league, what a season as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so exciting. For once, we're in nearly in February and we're not like, yeah, Bayern are 15 points clear. And, I mean, we just really got to talk about how exciting Augsburg's away form has been, you know. We don't have to do that anymore. Nothing against Augsburg.
I just have to sort of clarify, this is not the DFL's podcast. This is not the DFL's podcast.
All right, that'll do it for this week's Tribuna Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast from. And if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. Matt Ford is at Matt_4D. Felix Tomsett at F Tomsett. Jonathan Harding at JohnBlog66, 2 G's and 2 6's. And I'm at Davis_FinOptor. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.